Hi, thank you for coming, for being here. This isn't one of those lectures where I'm showing things or telling you things in any kind of direct way. Lying down is encouraged, or whatever makes you comfortable, and closed eyes if you'd like. There's something about Norway that reminds me of home, or more than reminds me, it feels like home. The cold, liquid quality of the air, the long winters, the weathered rocks and dark fir trees, everything surrounded and bound by water. A certain taciturn shyness about the people, particularly outside of urban centers, which visitors can mistake for unfriendliness. All of this isn't so different from Maine, the northeasternmost state of the United States. Maine is where I was born and spent the first 22 years of my life, more than half so far. It's easy to be alone there, to be quiet. I think it might also be easy to be alone here. But what do I know? This is only my second time visiting your country. It's possible I'm mistaking cliches for profundities. In fact, what do I even know about Maine? I was all set to tell you that my home state has the distinction of having the only fjord on the entire eastern seaboard. But I just checked, and here's what Wikipedia has to say. While often described as the, quote, only fjord on the east coast, end quote, Soames Sound lacks the extreme vertical relief and anoxic sediments associated with Norwegian fjords, and is now called a fjord by officials, a smaller drowned glacial embayment. The first time I came to Norway, I got stranded here. I had been invited to a dance festival in Bergen, and I stayed an extra night so as to go on a day trip, to take an early morning jostling bus to a ferry, to take that ferry into an actual fjord, the rushing air too cold for my face, and then to take a train through the mountains, the machine furiously pumping us up and into a world of white angular drifts and curving blue ice, the darker edges of rock occasionally showing through like skeletal matter. However touristy and packaged, I couldn't resist this outing, which offered a chance to see a little of the countryside and not just shuttle in between studios and theaters that could be in any city, any country. The day was beautiful and then costly, as the delay of 24 hours meant that I was scheduled to fly into New York City, my home, just as a massive hurricane was making landfall on the east coast of the United States. Hurricanes, I should add, are not routine occurrences as far north as New York, and this one was the largest ever recorded in the Atlantic Basin. Entire neighborhoods were destroyed by floodwaters, the mass transit system was shut down, and it was impossible to fly anywhere close to the city. I was marooned, which was basically fine. I had running water and electricity after all, unlike millions of people back home. Other than the strange malaise, of course, of being cut off from what you know. And so, aimless and broke, I took an 8 a.m. ferry to Stavanger at the very kind invitation of Ivar Findlay, the one person I then knew just barely in Norway. I remember the almost too bright light of morning, the streaks and smudges of evaporated salt water on the boat's large window, the small rocky outcroppings of land rearing up from the choppy sea. It was on the ferry that I composed the first few lines of The Ferry's Turning Course Now, Away from the Sun, a poem that eventually became a performance piece. We just listened to the recording of it from the first album of Animals and Giraffes, the improvisation collective I founded a few years ago with the composer and saxophonist Philip Greenleaf. That trip was in the fall of 2012. Incidentally, I was scheduled to come to Norway the previous fall in 2011 to the same Bergen festival, only to become violently ill the night before my departure. It's the only time I've ever failed to make it onto an airplane. Is there an expression in Norwegian along the lines of third time's a charm? Marta said I could talk about anything. What is the anything I have to say, I wonder, that might connect with the anything you want to listen to? I have been having trouble with this prompt, the openness of it. For instance, I just spent a few moments listening to online pronunciation guides for fjord and fjord. Is this a worthwhile piece of information to include? Will my crestfallenness at Soames Sound being demoted to a fjord interest you? Or will you already begin covertly checking your phones? Should I write in the present tense or the future tense? Where my writing self is now, an airplane, or where my speaking self is now, this room? And anyway, who tells a room full of Norwegians about the one lousy, not even fjord she grew up near, as if that will forge some sort of cultural connection? Lectures are weird and difficult creatures. What on earth have I gotten myself into? I ask that every time I agree to give one. A couple of weeks ago, when I started making preliminary notes for this, I wrote to my friend Silas. I said, I can't think of a single thing I want to say about myself. He wrote back, John Cage's lectures on nothing, always a good place to start. I think our desire for new information and incessant creation is really ripe for a takedown. Your lecture should have insatiable beasts, devouring nothing. I must think on that, I said. The latter part, that is, what do insatiable beasts devouring nothing look like in a lecture? Yes, interesting, what indeed, he wrote back unhelpfully. Big gaping mouths of fire. Then I wrote all of this down and sent a picture of it to him, and he said, seems like a good beginning. Is it the beginning? You'd think I'd know by now. This is typically how I make things, casting about in the dark, some kind of deadline, crowdsourcing. Gaping mouths of fire. That was in mid-August. The still air was heavy with moisture. I was in an airport traveling from a dance festival in Massachusetts, where I had just performed, to my parents' home in Maine. I would be back home for 2 weeks, barely enough time to get used to not waking up to an alarm clock, to soak in the delicious salt stink of the ocean and the pink granite slabs interrupted by ribbons of basalt. The rock so smooth it feels like fabric almost, its black weathered to a blue like the color of faraway mountains. Barely enough time to get used to my parents before the almost physical pain of saying goodbye to them again. That goodbye just happened, by the way, in another airport. It's now late summer, almost autumn, the air thin and crisp, no more thunderstorms. I'm flying back to Oakland, California, where I live. Our airplane is above the white-blue banks of cumulus clouds. I'm drinking uninspiring instant coffee, and the young boy next to me, who is traveling alone and was just given a snack box, is reading Ranger's Apprentice Book 3, The Icebound Land. I have been surreptitiously reading over his shoulder. Sentences like, "Keep your thieving hands to yourself," he snarled. I read a lot of books like that when I was a kid, fantasy, science fiction, comic books. Sometimes, especially when the weather was bad, I would spend entire days in bed reading, straight from my sleep to someone else's dream. The Icebound Land. I bet there are insatiable beasts there.